Well, thanks very much. Again, thanks everybody for giving me the opportunity to speak. I keep, every time I speak, I apologize because I'm not a regular attender at these seminars at all. It's just Friday's a bad evening for me. But I, again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk. Just on a small personal level, I'd like to remember a comrade that I knew pretty well, Chris Butler. He just died a few months ago. I just heard about it in the Standard, to be honest with you. So I'm just like to note him, he's passing. Well, as we're saying, my title is "Are We Left Wing or Right Wing?" It's obviously a bit deliberately mischievous and provocative, but I think there is a bit of an issue behind it that maybe we'll explore in the chat afterwards. I'll probably speak for 15, 20 minutes. So, is the Socialist Party a left wing or a right wing party? Where are we on the political spectrum? Have we moved in the spectrum? Like, are we more left wing than we were 100, 120 years ago? Or is the SPGB further to the left of the Labour Party now than it was 50 years ago? We got to remember, even if we don't move, and we usually state we don't move, because other parties are moving, our perceived position in the spectrum does vary with time. And that kind of ties in with, what does the public think socialism means now? The same as it always did, or something different? And would we use the name or the word socialist in our name or in our material if we were starting again and we're going to be founded in the year 2026? I think conventionally, at least from the outside, we're regarded as being located on the far left or the hard left of the spectrum. And that would imply we share values with all these other micro-Leninist and Trotskyite groups. Now, of course, we reject that because we feel we don't belong to any of those categories. Just to sort of set the where I'm coming from, I'm not really posing these questions as a party member, but as if I was a kind of an interested and sympathetic outsider looking in. And also, I should say, I'm not a political scientist, so I know there's a lot of analysis on left wing, right wing, of sociological nature, and I'm just giving my own personal opinions on this talk this evening. It's partly motivated by the frustration that if you do say you're a socialist, you're kind of automatically, I feel, pigeonholed as, oh, you believe in this set of beliefs. So it's an open talk that I'm giving tonight, so hopefully not too rambling. So if I just kind of get into it, well, what's left and right anyway? Well, I take it is that left-wing parties, they want to promote a change in the structures of society to make it to make it fair, and also they probably favour cooperation between different countries. And right-wing parties, they kind of stress individual advancement in society, and they believe there's a more inherently competitive relationship between countries. Now, some of this, of course, is just rhetoric, because when they're in power, left-wing, right-wing parties, they can deliver much the same results. But, for most of my life, at least, the main characteristic of what made a party left-wing was intervention in the economy to achieve some set of goals. Either developing some industries that were regarded as critical to the nation, or, achieving fair income equality. Whereas on the other side, right-wing or conservative political people, they had a more laissez-faire attitude to business, and they were more relaxed about wealth inequality in society, probably seeing it as something that was just intrinsic to the human condition. Now, that's just looking at, intervention in the economy as a measure of left-right. You could also then consider things like attitudes towards national identity. Many far-left groups all around the world, they obviously favour a large degree of state or government control of the economy. But then this implies there's a strong central state and leads to kind of top-down authoritarian power structures. I mean, the old Soviet Union would have been a classic example of that. Now, of course, many far-right movements, they have similar ideas as well. And then that kind of leads to this kind of horseshoe analogy where parties at either end of the horseshoe, they're actually quite close together for many of their policies. And of course, we're outside that because our instincts, they're more libertarian, cooperative. I'd even say they're just basically more liberal. So, I think it can be hard to make sense of or give a definite opinion on what's right wing, what's left wing. Is Putin, is he right wing or left wing? How about the Chinese government, the regime in Iran? And it's also because parties within capitalism, they're constantly and opportunistically moving or pretending to move their positions to gain advantages over rival parties. And then, of course, much of identity politics is impossible to categorise as being either left or right. Now, I think it's kind of changed a little bit in what I would term the Anglo world over the last 10 years. Like, historically, in the US, the Republican Party and its allies and the think tanks and the media outlets, they characterise any state intervention, even if it's in its mildest, most beneficial form, as unwanted socialism. But of course, now with Trump in charge, you know, we see the state in America, you know, it takes shares in private companies, it directs business plans, it controls trade, but that's not called socialism, at least by Trump and his friends. In fact, over there now, far left now seems to denote exclusive culture war activity and not traditional class politics. You know, I think for the Trump and his colleagues on the populist right, you know, left wing is just a term of abuse, and I think it's devoid of any content. I suppose it's a bit like on the left, where some left-wingers label all their right-wing opponents as fascists. I was struck with that guy, Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated, whatever, a few months ago. He was regarded or described as combating left-wing ideology in the USA, but really he was just a culture war warrior battling woke identity politics as he saw it. You know, I think it's kind of clouded as well because Trump pretends to have a great affinity and share the concern of organised labour. You know, and think of particularly workers in these traditional industries like coal, construction and transport. I think he seems to like the macho appeal that he thinks that they have. Maybe it explains why he's apparently his favourite band is Village People. Of course, he's not the first right-wing demagogue now to adopt this tactic. And yet for all this kind of bogus populism, I think in the US now, capitalism, it's more nakedly elitist in a way that we haven't seen for 100 years. You know, Trump is acting like a classic imperialist. Straight out of the 19th century, you know, the US wants to take over Greenland so it can control the Arctic trade routes. It wants the rare earth metals of Ukraine and the Democratic Republic of Congo. It wants control of the access to the oil of Venezuela. It wants to impose trade deals on other countries, forcing them to buy American goods. You know, there's no longer any pretense that these maneuvers are connected with spreading democracy and the rule of law. I mean, it's especially clear with Greenland, where there's no mention or intention of getting the agreement of Greenlanders to any change in their position. You know, and the disagreement with China, it's no longer couched as a clash between an authoritarian communist government and a freedom-loving democratic West. It's now said to be a straightforward competition to who's going to be the dominant capitalist power on Earth. And the tech multi-billionaires at this stage, Musk, Bezos, Zuckerberg, Ellison, they don't hide their connections to the US government anymore. You know, they openly support Trump with money, and in return, he uses US power to defend their profits at home and abroad. So, you know, government doesn't pretend to be acting in the interest of the nation. It acts in the interest of the very wealthy capitalist class. And it's not just in the US, you know, in places like in Argentina with the Milei and in Hungary with Orban, you know, they routinely denounce socialism as the root of all evil. You know, in their view, the smaller the state, the better, you know. You know, even in Britain, there's this blue Labour caucus within the Labour Party that it kind of express opinions that seem very close to Reform UK, even though Reform UK is apparently on very much the right of the spectrum and Labour is meant to be at least somewhere the left of the spectrum. I mean, of course, it suggests a lot of these mainstream parties, they contain members who could be quite at home, actually, in other parties. And that's been shown over the years, I think, by the amount of defections that have occurred. The other thing I think we see at the moment is that the cult of leadership is back in fashion. Trump, Farage, Putin, you know, ideology is subservient to personality. I always kind of associate these right-wing figures, this kind of leadership cult with the right. But of course, it is true, there's been plenty of left-wing strongmen over the years too. I just need to say a few things I think about identity politics, because I think nowadays this identity politics, it seems increasingly dominant, at least in terms of what makes the news cycle. You know, politicians on either side of the left-right divide, they trade accusations of Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, homophobia, misogyny at each other. You know, characteristically, the left accuses the right of Islamophobia, and then the right counters with charges of anti-Semitism to its left-wing opponents. And then they both take turns to accuse each other of homophobia and misogyny, depending on what the current controversy is playing out. I think a big factor in all this and what drives a lot of identity politics right now at the moment is immigration. It's back as a major issue. It's obviously, it got Brexit over the line in Britain, and I think it probably still is Trump's biggest electoral selling point. It's particularly the case, of course, if the immigrants are noticeably different, whether it's skin colour or the clothes they wear or the language they speak. It makes them very visible and tangible, and then, of course, they're easy to pick on, So these concerns about immigration, they're a bit like concerns about crime levels. Parties are unscrupulously stoking them up, just to gain an electoral advantage. So now, if I talk about that, of course, identity politics, there's nothing new about it. Identity politics, of course. Like, I think even in Ireland, particularly in Northern Ireland, identity politics is still a defining feature and has been so for a very, very long number of years. So you can kind of ask, do left-right divisions have much resonance anymore with the public now that we have this era of identity politics and opportunistic populism? And some right and left-wing ideas in terms of state intervention kind of seem to be identical to me in terms of their practical operation. Both sides of the spectrum, they have ideas like not having what they term foreign ownership of critical infrastructure. And I find it sometimes frustrating that even as a socialist on a personal level, it can kind of sometimes be difficult to see where your instinctive sympathies lie. I'm not talking about politically agreeing with different groups, just what kind of warms your heart more than something else. I mean, I'll give you an example. Like, I kind of instinctively like the anti-war, pro-peace sentiments of the left. A good example to me of this was a few months ago, there was some left-winger on the BBC radio programme, Any Questions? And the topic was Ukraine. And the rest of the panel, they were unanimous about the need to militarily support Ukraine and to emphasize the importance of the territorial integrity of the country. But she, it was a woman, was that I'm thinking of, she pointed out to me what are obvious facts, not even political points. She said, there's no, the war has been a stalemate for the past 3 years. There's no real sign of victory for Ukraine. Maybe Ukraine has to give up some land for peace, at least temporarily. Is that such a bad thing? And I kind of like that emphasis on, peace being around the world, being a good thing to achieve for. But then, and that's kind of a left-wing thing. But then again, the left then strongly believes in the necessity of this of a Palestinian state existing with defined borders, and they want strong or significant measures against Israeli aggression. So they too believe that each ethnic group must have its own country. So that's just as nationalistic as the right, of course. If I bring it just back to Ireland, there's a debate I start to hear about defence. Since the foundation of the what's the Republic of Ireland, for historical reasons, we, I'm using we in the usual sense, we stood apart from Western Europe, having a militarily neutralist position regarding particularly the Cold War, and the country was kind of anti-NATO, at least a good part of the population was. But then, of course, with the recent Ukraine war and with this kind of current ambiguous US position on security guarantees to Europe, this has provoked a reappraisal that's kind of ongoing. And what you find is the left here is opposed to any softening of our position on NATO. It opposes increasing defence expenditure, and it opposes becoming involved in defence arrangements with other European countries. And you can see why you might admire some aspects of that. I mean, I'm thinking Sinn Féin, which is, I suppose, now the main standard bearer of the left here, that very much takes this position. And there is agreement, sorry, there is support for it throughout the Republic. But then you find Sinn Féin supporters, they're also very strong in promoting the Irish language and intrinsic Irish culture. And there's a strong streak of isolationism present with them. And I was thinking, if that was Trump, people would be denouncing this as kind of pure as just reactionary nativism, but yet because it's coming from a supposedly a left-wing angle, it's regarded as being progressive politics. Although some of the stuff you can hear people from Sinn Féin associate groups come out with, in part some of it is, it's not too different from what you can hear on GB News any evening in terms of their what they regard as things they should oppose. So where are we with all this? I mean, and I know I've covered a lot of different things. I mean, all this demonstrates the truth of what we've, as a socialist, have said for many years. I think this left-right classification of politics is best very simplified, and many times I think it's just a con trick. Like some controversy that's been around the last few months is the Epstein revelations, and they do show the Epstein revelations. It is real. There is elites in society. And whether it's Clinton allegedly on the progressive wing of politics or Trump as we would say, avowedly on the right wing of politics. They were both fairly thick with Epstein. Prince Andrew is a senior member of the British royal family, was involved. JP Morgan, they paid hundreds of millions to the victims. You have to wonder what's going on there. So there's definitely an Eli present, but of course they're in charge and they can control the perception of how they're viewed. Because I find, again, think of the Epstein thing, these kind of controversies, they do provoke conspiracy theorizing about what's going on. And I usually would associate that with very much at the far right end of the spectrum. But of course, at heart, it is motivated by emotions that I, in different circumstances, could make socialists of them. There's clearly this anger at the injustice of the system, and the way the very wealthy manage to get away with stuff that other people can't. But of course, there's confusion about the cause, you know? I'm also thinking here of that US legislator, Marjorie Taylor Greene, whom I was always understood was a fervent Trump supporter. But after his intervention in Venezuela, she condemned him and the Republicans and equally the Democrats, saying they're both just fueling the US war machine. Now, I would have generally regarded as Marjorie Taylor Greene as being completely bonkers, but I think at that point she's not too far away from the truth. So if I just kind of maybe come to the end of this, I mean, ultimately, it's the capitalist system is competitive. It breeds competition between workers. And of course, unscrupulous politicians aren't slow to come forward and to exploit that. So for the populist right, there's this kind of bogus intervention to defend native or homeborn workers against immigrant workers or against unfair farm practices. Of course, on the left, there's intervention too. Now, we're probably a bit more supportive of left-wing intervention just on the basis that our policy of we support genuine reforms. Of course, not the policy or the principle of reformism. One thing I think it's important, and I think the party has been successful, not to get sucked into identity politics. We're clearly supportive of maximum human freedom that's possible because we are a libertarian outfit, I think. But we do put the working class centre stage. And I think we are kind of unique in being absolutist in terms that the only important distinction in society is between workers and capitalists. Other left-wing groups, and I'm thinking here of Corbyn's latest party, I mean, they will talk about the conflict between workers and capitalists, but then they introduced ideas about gender, sexuality, ethnicity, religion as additional factors, and that then can cloud, what exactly is the point of the party and what do they want to change? I suppose just coming to the very end now, I think, the left-right division obviously reflects competing views on how existing society should be rearranged, because our fundamental philosophy is to entirely replace the system of capitalism and not to amend it or push it more in one direction or another direction. So I think in that sense, we're neither left nor right, And maybe we should stress this more openly, not be afraid to say, we're not a left-wing party, Now, we still have the name, the Socialist Party, of course, and I'm not proposing to change that because I think that's just going down a rabbit warren. But what I find funny is that radical political ideas like we have, like there should be we kind of a society with no money, no countries, no leaders, that's kind of conventionally dismissed as crazy, far left nonsense. But I really reject that. I think in a lot of our material, we point out the complete waste and pointlessness of the current system. And that a much better system is possible. So, in that sense, maybe we're not the Socialist Party, we're the Sensible Party. Now, I'm not proposing we change our name because the Sensible Party sounds a bit boring and it's probably a bit sanctimonious. But, maybe that's kind of something we shouldn't be afraid of pushing more. So, well, anyway, there are my thoughts on this matter. So, as always, I think it's the conversation that follows afterwards is probably more enlightening than anything I've said. But at least I've got the ball rolling, so I'll hand it over back to Paddy, I suppose.